Are you ready for episode number 46?
Ready, go!
Prepare yourself. Okay, let's go.
It's time for Road Trekking, the podcast. Traveling North America in a small motor home. Exploring, camping, boondocking, embracing the RV lifestyle, and sharing tips and where to go and how to keep things running right. Here's award-winning journalist Mike Wendland and his network of road trekking reporters.
Hello, everybody. This is a show that celebrates the RV lifestyle. And whether you have a small RV like the Road Trek Jennifer and I travel in, or a great big Class A motorhome, a fifth wheel, a pop-up, heck, even if you dry camp out of your car or tent and are just thinking about getting an RV, this show's for you. We talk about getting out there, enjoying God's creation, meeting interesting people, finding great campsites, exploring the countryside, and sharing tips on keeping our RVs running right and using the right gear and technology to enhance our camping and RV experience. That's what Road Trekking the Podcast is all about, the RV lifestyle. This episode of Road Trekking the RV Podcast is brought to you by Van City RV, where they only sell Class B motorhomes, used and new, from the major manufacturers. Aldi, A-L-D-E, the only name you need to know when choosing a heating system for your RV. And Leisure Time RV, a family-owned dealership that always has a full line of Road Trek motorhomes in stock at great prices. Well, hi, everybody. We are delighted to have you with us on episode number 46. Everything we talk about today, all of the links, all the resources, if you're driving or jogging or at the health club as you're listening to this, don't worry about having to stop and write down something, because we have a show notes page in which we have all of the stuff we talk about. We have links to them on that show note page. And you find that this week at the blog, roadtrekking.com. And you can just go to roadtrekking.com/46. And that will take you directly to the show notes page, but you'll find it on the blog. It's prominently listed. We have a lot of great stuff coming up. Some fun listener questions this week, and we'll get to them in just a minute or so. We've got some RV tips and suggestions, RV news of the week, a great destination to put on your bucket list, and an interview about solo RVing, traveling by yourself in an RV, what that involves. And also, we'll talk a little bit for everybody about what happens when a bunch of RVers gather together at either a rally or a small event. So what, you ever wonder what those are all like? We'll talk about those a little bit later on with Sherry Targum. She's the president of Road Trek International, and we'll talk to her later on in the program. But first, welcome, if you will, my lifelong traveling companion and my bride, Jennifer. Hello, dear.
Hello, Michael.
This has been a very tough week for us, and I hesitate to even talk about it, because sometimes it gets pretty overwhelming emotionally. But we need to acknowledge that we lost our dog last week, Ty, our who's been our little buddy, our traveling companion on all of our road trek adventures. He loved to road trek, but he was diagnosed with cancer a couple of weeks ago, and we lost him last week, and we're still kind of recovering.
Oh, it was a big surprise.
Yeah, and it's you know, those of you who are dog people, you understand. And you know, Jen, I looked the other day, we've had over almost 2,500 notes and references from people, either in emails or blog posts or Facebook groups, expressing sympathies to us. And boy, for those of you who have taken the time to send a note to us, thank you so much. You have no idea how much that means.
I thank you so much. And our second dog, when she passed, I think she's the only dog in history that had an obit.
Yeah, well, Ty just had one.
An obit, yeah. In the Detroit Free Press.
Yeah, I did.
We received notes from a lot of folks then too. Anybody who's a dog owner, you know the pain that they become really part of the family.
They do. And we're just not going to talk about it anymore, because it's pretty, you know, it's still fresh. And we may get a dog. Everybody keeps saying, hey, get another dog. We'll get one right now. But we're not ready right now. We need to properly grieve for Ty. And that's going to take a little while. Time does heal. You'll never forget the dogs. Dogs are awesome, awesome gifts.
They really are. And we've had a dog for 36 years.
Not Ty.
Three dogs. Yeah. I mean, we've had lots of dogs, so it's very strange having a house without a dog. And then, of course, Ty, he's special.
And he loved that road trek. And it's we're taking a trip. We're leaving in just a day or so for several states down south. And it's going to be pretty empty in that road trek without him, too, isn't it?
It certainly is. Right.
But thank you for all of you who have sent notes to us. And those of you who do have a dog, do us a favor, will you? And give that dog a hug for us.
Is it a gadget,
a recipe, a tip?
Whatever she has in store for us,
it promises to make the RV lifestyle a little more fun or efficient.
Here's Jennifer with her RV tip of the week.
In our RV, we have one simple rule, a place for everything, and everything has a place. So this week, I want to share that place with you. Actually, we have several of these. It's a very inexpensive but very handy storage solution for miscellaneous things, a self-adhering mesh net storage organizer. We've got several of these in our RV. They're made of nylon. They're about 7 inches wide by 5 inches high. They attach to any solid surface with special double-sided adhesive tape, so you don't have to drill a hole. They stretch, and we use them to hold cell phones, chargers, keys, medicine, maps, notebooks, you know, that sort of thing. They cost $5.89 on Amazon. And like I said, we've got three of them in various places in our Road Trek RV. One by my side of the bed, one by Mike's side, and one on the galley wall. A place for everything and everything a place. That's what these little storage nets do. You can find a link to them from our show notes page at roadtrekking.com/46.
Questions.
You've got them. Mike and his network of road trekking reporters have the answers.
Here's one of our listener RV questions of the week.
Hello, Mike. This is Jerry Wilcox from Santa Fe, New Mexico. I've been interested in Class B motorhomes for a few years, but haven't made a purchase yet. My initial needs are pretty simple. My wife and I will normally be traveling between here and the West Coast to visit family. The basic needs, of course, are the refrigerator, bathroom, and freedom to stretch out when we want. Looking longer term, however, I'd like to have a system that would let us boondock or be prepared for emergencies. I like the E-Trek since it didn't have the propane system, one less consumable to deal with. As my research continued, I looked closer at the Adventurous TS. It has the induction cooktop. The cooktop seemed to be the driving factor in most of the other models forcing propane. I checked the Aldi documentation. It says it will run with either electric or propane. So it sounds like I can actually operate the TS in all-electric mode with no propane required. Would that be your understanding as well? The TS is also the only model I'm aware of for 2016 with the Coach Connect, a feature I find attractive based on my aerospace background and more recently telematics products. I'm waiting to see the EcoTrek packaging and pricing options. Regardless of the model I finally select, it will have lithium batteries, an engine generator, and solar. Sorry for the long intro, but this leads me to my main questions. I haven't seen or heard anything concerning solar panels in a hailstorm. What size hail presents a problem? What about other falling objects like kids throwing rocks or pine cones or leaves falling from trees? If a single cell is broken, does it take out the whole panel? I realize most of these are multi-paneled, but just wondered if I would be losing any solar capability based on a single cell going out. If possible, could you also address solar panel maintenance, cleaning, and snow? I'm enjoying your podcast and looking forward to many future versions. Talk to you soon. Thanks.
Well, thank you very much for that question. Boy, you've got a lot of material there, and let me try and just answer that as best we can. First of all, in terms of your pricing, there's just so many variables that you need to talk to a dealer, not us, because they change, they add new stuff all the time. And you did mention propane. We have no problem with propane. We had an E-Trek with no propane, but we have propane on the CS Adventures we have. We like propane.
Yes, but I can see where he's coming from that he doesn't want the propane. He wants to be totally independent.
Yeah, well, you pretty much are. I mean, the propane lasts forever. I mean, unless you're going to stay out there a month, then you might worry about losing, running out of propane, but... we have no problem. We had no propane on our E-Trek, And that was great. We have it on our CS Adventures. And we kind of like propane for heating with our Aldi heater and with cooking. We like cooking over gas. We prefer that over electricity, just like we do at home. So, but as for all those other options and Coach Connect, which is sort of the wireless system that one of the Road Trek models has, talk to your dealer. Go look at them and have them price all that stuff up. There's lots of things that you can mix and match and hook up your own stuff. And it's impossible for us to keep track of all those changes and all those options. Now, you did ask about the solar panel. And that was an issue that Jennifer raised when we first got ours. This is our second unit with solar. And you kept saying, what's going to happen if we hit hail? Remember, you were all worried about that. And then the snow that piles up on it.
Yes, I was very concerned about that.
Well, here's the thing. You don't have to worry about hail. Unless any hail that is going to damage your solar panels is going to total your vehicle. So let's put it that way. So if you had hail damage, the solar panel is going to be the least of your worries. They hold up really well. The glass used in solar panels is tempered glass. It's incredibly strong. RV solar panels are generally about an eighth inch or so. That's 3.2 millimeters for you Canadians. They are, you know, really strongly tempered glass. They're very protected. They're mounted in an aluminum frame. And the standard for solar panels is they can withstand hailstones of different diameters traveling at various speeds. You know what that standard is? The official requirement, and this is described in international standard IEC 61215, for those of you who follow that book, is that solar panels have to be able to withstand a hailstone of 1 inch in diameter. And that's about 7.5 grams of mass and traveling at a speed of 50 miles an hour. Now, this is the this speed, by the way, coincides with the terminal velocity, the fastest speed a free-falling hailstone can reach of an inch hailstone. So do you know what an inch hailstone would do to your vehicle, let alone your solar panels? So don't worry about the hail. If it's going to wreck your solar panel, it's going to wreck your vehicle. And manufacturers typically perform their own lab tests on all these. They involve firing. Literally, they have this test where they fire hail pellets of various sizes from this pneumatic gun directly at a solar panel. And they do it to demonstrate that they are able to exceed the minimum requirement in the hope of gaining a competitive edge. So don't worry about this. California University of Technology did a study on this, on RV solar panels. And again, they can withstand hailstones of an inch in diameter, which is almost enough to knock you out if it hit you, traveling at 50 miles an hour. So you don't have to worry about that. So no problem with hail. Because if any hail is going to wreck, that's going to wreck much more than your solar panels. Now, as to snow, we live in Michigan. How much snow do we have on the roof last year and the year before? I mean, it was, it was a lot of snow. How much do we have out there?
A couple of inches.
How much snow did we get last year? We live in Michigan, dear.
The year before was the snow year.
Last year, our biggest snow was 19 inches. The year before, we had over 2 feet at one time of a big storm. So we had a little more than a couple of inches.
Well, the snow didn't impress me last year because the year before we had so much snow. I've never seen snow like that before. I loved it.
So we have had on ours over 2 feet of snow, and it covers the whole car. The solar panels won't charge if there's 2 feet of snow on it, but they're built to withstand that load. So you don't have to worry. You can shovel it off. I've gone up there once or twice. I think in preparation of a trip when we had a lot of snow, I went up there with a broom, a long-handled broom, and pushed the snow off so the solar panels could start functioning.
I think those are excellent questions that he had. And also, everything keeps getting better. They keep testing and improving, so things are always evolving.
They are. So don't worry about the solar panels. That's the long and short of it, and we appreciate that call very much. Thank you so much. Are you ready for another question?
Sure.
Here we go.
Yeah, hi, my name is Mike. I'm just wondering if anyone knows of an RV shop in the north of Houston, which is possibly the better one to go to for camping bits and pieces and general merchandise for my road trip. Thank you very much.
Well, that's a pretty easy one. I just Googled it for you, Mike, but you can do the same thing. Just Google RV supplies in Houston. And if you're looking specifically for a road trek, if you go to the Road Trek site, roadtrek.com, that's the corporate site for Road Trek, slash locators, you will find that there is a Road Trek dealer. I think it's Demontrod RV. I may not pronouncing that right, but they're on in Houston, Texas. And you can find that. I'll put a link on our show notes for you, Mike. There's also a big Camping World store of Houston. It's actually in Katy, which is a suburb there of Houston. But Camping World has tons of RV parts and accessories. And that just goes back to my my general tip all the time. Whenever you want anything, just go to the University of Google.
That's true. We can find out anything there.
All right. We're going to have a little bit of fun. I'm going to put you to the test here, Jennifer. Do you know this song? Okay, recognize that little lyric?
Is that pontoon?
That is. It's Little Big Town. I love that song. Pontoon. Well, we have a special little gift that we received from one of our listeners in her questions.
Gifts are always fun.
This is fun. This is really cool. So remember that little song. But actually, the listener first has a pretty good question. So meet Gwen.
Hey, Mike. Hey, Jen. Gwen Harris here from Whispering Pines, North Carolina. I'm a road trek wannabe. My dog Maggie and I have our eyes on the Zion. My question is about registering the RV in another state. Even though my home is in North Carolina, they charge a personal property tax every year here. I read an article online about it, but I didn't quite understand the details. Say, for instance, I wanted to register it in South Dakota. How would that work? I look forward to hearing your answer about that. I love your podcast. So fun and informative. I wrote a little road trek song, short and sweet, and it's sung to the melody of a song called Pontoon by a group called Little Big Town. Here goes. Looking for a little adventure. Traveling was part of my plan. Thought about the ways I could do it. Then I found this really cool van. It's called a road trek. Covering lots of miles in my road trek. Listening to Mike in my road trek. Love this RV living. Keep that engine revving. Ooh, I'm in heaven. Jim Hamill, there's your theme song. Thanks, Mike. See you down the road.
Wow. Isn't that great?
That was lots of fun, Gwen.
Oh, boy, you got a great voice, Gwen. Okay. Wow, that was fun. That was fun.
That was fun. Did that take you back to your radio days when you used to be a disc jockey?
Oh, yeah. That was my first job. Worked my way through high school as a disc jockey. Yeah,
that's right.
That was great. Yeah, I love that song from Little Big Town anyway. But she did a really good job with that.
Certainly did.
Yeah. I'd like to actually put some music behind that. It would make that our little theme on the podcast here. Well, thank you, Gwen, for that little surprise at the end of it. Now, you raised a very interesting question because taxes on RVs are scandalous. They are so high. Nobody likes paying taxes on them. And so there's all sorts of various schemes afoot to save you. And one of the biggest controversies in the RV world these days has to do with this fine line between tax avoidance and tax evasion.
I don't know. Death and taxes, you can't avoid them, can you?
No, you can't. And so what's happening? Well, there's a couple of things that are happening. First, you mentioned the question of registering your vehicle in another state. And a state that has really seen an opportunity there to make some money is Montana. And so what has happened is a lot of people have set up an LLC business, a little LLC corporation in Montana, and they use that to purchase the motorhome, and then they avoid the sales and use tax in their home states and sometimes very stiff registration fees in the home state. Now, thousands of RV owners across the country do this, and there are you go to any big RV rally, and you'll find all these Montana corporations and legal firms that are there, and they specialize in making this happen. We happen to live in a state that has very high taxes, Michigan, And as you look around, you'll find out that you can pay as much as $5,000 to $8,000 in sales tax and registration fees when you buy a vehicle, a road truck. So it's pretty tough. But what Montana does is it works. The scheme kind of works like this: you form this LLC business, costs you about $1,000 to have one of the Montana law firms set up your LLC. They do the registration, then they title your vehicle. They send you to the they send you back Montana license plates for your RV. And because Montana has no sales tax on an RV, your only cost is the $1,000 that costs to set up the business that technically owns the RV. That's a Montana corporation. And so the $150 or so the law firm charges every year to renew your registration and your charter, that's about it. Now, it's perfectly legal to do that in Montana. And indeed, forming LLCs and registering RVs like that's a big business out there. But the rub comes in your home state. The high tax states like Michigan that do impose use and sales taxes and high registration fees on RVs, they are not fools. They quickly realize that somebody's getting around their system. So what they have done is they've taken steps to counter the scheme by writing laws and regulations that make it very difficult for their residents to take advantage of it. For example, in Michigan, it's required that a non-resident owner of a pleasure vehicle, otherwise subject to registration under this act, shall not operate the vehicle for a period exceeding 90 days without securing registration. What does that mean? Is there a loophole there? Well, Montana firms, law firms say there is. They say if you take the motorhome out of your home state once every 3 months, you're legal. And they interpret that as keeping the motorhome in your home state for 90 consecutive days. So if you head out of state after 89 days, they claim you're good. And when you return, you can stay another 89 days. Naturally, they caution the RV owner to keep detailed records. But that's how the Montana law firms insist you can avoid these high registration fees. The biggest bite in buying an RV in one of the high tax states like Michigan comes in the form of a use tax, though. A sales tax currently is 6% in Michigan. And because Michigan and other states, probably yours, I think, too, Gwen, have agreements to collect each other's sales tax, buying out of state alone isn't the solution. So as far as sales and use taxes, my home state has two provisions, one for non-residents and one for residents. It gets really complicated. But let me just tell you that I cannot recommend this because the high states taxes have watched all of this go down, in particular like I think you said South Dakota, North Dakota, they also will do registration for you so you can save it. You can register your vehicles there. The high tax states like Michigan and California and Colorado, they have enacted laws that make this very difficult because they know what they are. They're really a scheme to avoid taxes. And so they have become very aggressive in hunting down RVs with Montana, South Dakota license plates. And then what they've been doing is suing the owners for taxes and penalties. And I looked, some of the RV forums claim they've set up tip lines with rewards for people who spot an RV with Montana plates parked in a storage yard or a driveway for a long time. And others say inspectors regularly visit RV repair facilities and look for vehicles with Montana or South Dakota, North Dakota plates. It's pretty tough. So I need to say that while a great number of RVers take advantage of this stuff and use these schemes, particularly full-timers, they're probably okay because they're gone. Their home really is in the RV. They're gone for very long periods from their home states. It's probably workable. But for us, you know, we're back home every 5 or 6 weeks and we're here for stuff. I'm not going to take the chance to do it. Plus, I'm too visible. You know, if I had a vehicle with a South Dakota plate out there in our driveway or you know, people would know. So, you know, and the other thing, and just for us, is I think it borders on kind of being unethical. I mean, I don't like paying taxes.
Guess you just got to move to another state. Got to move to South Dakota, North Dakota, Montana.
Now, you know where I want to move.
Oh, I know. You want to go to Montana in a heartbeat.
I have absolutely fallen in love with Montana and Wyoming. I would live there. How many times a week do I tell you I want to go live in Montana?
I mean, the no sales tax, I bought something in Montana, I had to return it at a store in Michigan, and the sales girl was like, there's no sales tax. I said, yeah, in Montana, there's no sales tax.
Yeah, it is just such a great place. But I do live in Michigan. That's where our Sticks and Bricks home is. And by the way, if you hear any hammering above, they're putting on a new roof on our Sticks and Bricks home as we're recording this in our studio.
Never a dull moment in our house.
No. I guess the bottom line is I would be very leery of doing this unless you're going to be a full-timer, because these high sales, these high tax states, they're looking for revenue, and they love to get a hold of you if you're trying to avoid their taxes, and then they hit penalties. So the hassle of looking over my shoulder for somebody trying to find me and isn't worth the tax savings. It's got to be another way, I don't know.
And wouldn't they just love to nail you?
Yeah. Oh, would they ever?
Yeah.
Yeah. They really.
We just pay.
Yeah, and we pay. And
we pay and we dream about moving.
Yeah, to Montana.
We got our kids and some grandkids here. We got kids in Georgia and grandkids in Georgia. What's the taxes like in Georgia?
Well, I don't think they're nearly as bad, but you know, Georgia,
it's hot.
We're going down there in a couple of days. It's 100 degrees and the humidity is about 110.
Mike is going to make a football video for our grandson, who's a senior in high school this year. Mike made one for his father and his uncle this senior year playing football. So got to get a football video for the team.
Yep. My grandson, Nick, is a senior in high school down there. And when they were in Michigan, you know, he grew up watching his dad and his uncle, the videos I made for my two sons when they were in high school. And so I said, okay, Nick, I'll make one for you when you're a senior. Well, he's a senior. I made that promise when he lived in Michigan.
And now they're 940 miles away. And so we are going to do a lot of miles.
And he's still holding me to that promise. So we're going to be back and forth in our road trek down to Georgia between now and November.
I don't do well with heat. It's going to be so hot and humid down there.
Yeah.
I'm going to melt.
You're going to melt. Yeah, it's there. All right. Well, thank you. We had some great questions, and we love to hear from reader questions as well. Jennifer, thank you for being with me. People keep asking me how you're feeling, and I should say we were at the doctor last week. You still have a touch of pneumonia.
I still have a touch of pneumonia. So we're trying to get out of this hole.
So I'll take you down to Georgia this week, and you can just sweat
it
out.
In the humidity.
Yeah, just sweat that right out.
It's been killing me not exercising. I'm exercising a little bit. The pulmonologist said, take it easy.
Yeah.
But so, I'm trying to be good, but it's very hard.
It's very good. Well, thank you. We'll see you on the road in a couple
of
days. All right. So you got a question? Would you like to be a part of it? We would love to hear from you.
Want to be part of the podcast? Ask a question. Leave a comment.
Look on the right side of Mike's RoadTrekking.com blog and click the send voicemail button. We welcome listener voices and love your questions.
Hey, this part of Road Trekking, the RV podcast, is brought to you by Van City RV, where they only sell Class B motorhomes, small motorhomes. The owner of Van City RV in St. Louis is Ray Dwyer, and he's been in the RV business for 45 years now. He's considered to be the dean of Class B RVs. Nobody knows more about the small motorhome business than Ray and his crew. They have new and used Class B motorhomes in stock from the major manufacturers, and when you fly in to buy your RV from Van City, they will arrange to have you picked up from the airport. They'll reimburse you up to $500 towards your airfare, and then your RV will be fully prepared for travel. Here is Dan, the van man from Van City RV, with this week's specials. Hi, Dan.
Thanks, Mike. Hey, we got two specials this week. We got a 1993 Explorer. Looks like the day it was made. This unit is super nice, kept in an airplane hangar most of its life. Only 43,000 miles on it. Somebody looking for a great starter unit, this is the one. I also got a 2008 Dynamax. Somebody looking for something in the B-plus size, this is a great unit. You can check those out on our website at vancityrv.com. Hey, don't forget the Road Trek promotion going on. Any Road Trek sold in stock here gets an additional lithium battery package added to it at no charge. Give us a call, 1-800-467-3905. Or check us out at vancityrv.com.
News. Mike's got news.
RV news. Travel news. Tips and trends about the small motorhome lifestyle.
Here's the road trekking news of the week.
Well, we've got a story from Yellowstone National Park, which we seem to be reporting about every 2 weeks here. It seems that another tourist ignores all the signs, all the warnings, and does something really stupid like trying to take a selfie with a bison behind them. They just seem to be, folks out at Yellowstone call these tourists tourons, tourist morons, because they seem to just have a lot of trouble taking in the message that it is not a good idea to get too close to wild animals. The latest person to find out the hard way is a 43-year-old Mississippi woman. She tried to take a selfie with one of the bisons near a hiking trail in the park the other day. She and her daughter turned their backs to the bison. It was about 6 yards away to take a photo of it. And I'm laughing, but I mean, come on. They heard the bison's footsteps moving toward them, and so they started to run. And the bison continued to pursue. He caught the mother on the right side, lifted her up, and tossed her with his head. Family took her from, this happened near the Fairy Falls Trailhead, beautiful area at Yellowstone. They took her to a clinic there near Old Faithful, and she was released, just minor injuries. Very lucky. She is the fifth person injured after approaching a bison in Yellowstone so far this year. And she's the third whose dangerous encounter resulted from trying to take a selfie. You know, I'm sorry. These people are truly tourons, morons. The family admitted, by the way, park authority said the family said they read the warnings in both the park literature and the signage, and but they saw other people getting close to the bison and they wanted a picture too. If you're out there, you know, I think I'm speaking to the choir here because you guys are all, you listen to this podcast, you're seasoned travelers and you know that wildlife is wild and they're not, this is not a Disney movie. They're not actors on stage, these little animals to film for your selfie background. They may seem docile, but this woman was really lucky that her injuries were not more severe. There was a 16-year-old girl from Taiwan who was gored by a bicycle in May. She suffered serious, not life-threatening, but very serious injuries. A 62-year-old Australian man was taking pictures within 5 feet of a bison near Old Faithful in June. The animal charged and tossed him into the air several times. He was hurt pretty bad. The rule is don't go within 25 yards of a bison or other large animals. Stay 100 yards away from bears and wolves. You know how fast bisons can move? They can sprint 3 times faster than humans. And it's pretty tough. In June, a 19-year-old Georgia woman was walking with friends to their car after a late-night swim in the Firehole River there in Yellowstone. They saw a bison lying about 10 feet away. And, you know, it was late at night. The animal charged the teen, tossed her in the air, leaving her with some injuries. And then about a week after that, a Georgia woman was hospitalized. She was attacked by a bison while hiking on Storm Point Trail. As she was passing this bison, it charged, it gored her. She was hurt so bad she had to be evacuated by a helicopter. So, you know, be smart, people. Go. I mean, Yellowstone, these things are beautiful creatures, but they're wild creatures. They live there. You are just visiting. Treat them with respect. That's Yellowstone. Let's go north now to the news from Glacier National Park. That's my favorite park, by the way. Yellowstone was my favorite, but Glacier has won my heart. Love that place. Absolutely beautiful. But they have had a massive wildfire there for the last week. And as we go to press with this edition of the podcast, we're successful, able to say they're successfully containing that fire. Hopefully they'll have it completely contained. It started about 6 miles east of Logan Pass along the west side of St. Mary Lake. And it's, as I'm doing this, it's about 20% contained, they think. And it's been downgraded from its peak acreage estimate of 4,000 acres to a little over 3,100 acres. But it was a pretty big firefighter event. They had 454 firefighting personnel on the scene. There were a number of people who canceled reservations, and they had some closures of some of the park features. So Glacier says, just come. You can still come, even though they had to close some of the Going to the Sun Road. That has now been reopened, I understand, as I'm going to press here. But a big wildfire, and it seems to be under control. And, you know, that's just part of nature. You go to all those national parks, you'll see, you know, massive strokes of dead pines, massive areas there. And that's just the way it kind of works. Nature's way of bringing about new growth. But you don't want to be caught in a wildfire. So always pay attention to that wherever you happen to be. All right, one more story, and that is an industry story about the RV sales boom. It's continuing to grow. You know, the big prime time for the RV industry was the year 2006. That was the top year. Well, we are able to now say that wholesale shipments of to retailers of all RVs tracked by the RV Industry Association show that they are now up to the 2006 levels. They are now rising to about 202,000 units. This is just amazing how well it's going. They have been selling RVs. It's the best rate of RV sales since June of 2006. That's pretty cool. So there's our RV News of the Week, brought to you by Alde, A-L-D-E. It's the only name you need to hear when you're looking for an RV heating system for your vehicle. The Alde hydronic system is what you want. It's beautiful. The hydronic system brings all sorts of features and benefits. It is a silent, radiant heat. And why you want that hydronic heat that Alde offers is because it is a even, natural heated interior, not that dry, forced air heat that you get with propane systems that just push out that air, you know, that this is a natural radiant heat. It is great for pets. If you travel with pets, this is a really nice heat for them. It gives you increased interior space because you combine two systems in one, your water heat system and your main heating system, heated air system. It is efficient. The whole system draws less than 1 amp on 12 volts DC, so it will extend the life of your propane because it uses propane or electric. There's an electric option as well, but it extends the life of your propane about 40% over forced air. Multiple options that you can choose with Alde. Lots of amenities, towel warmers, something that we have in our unit that Jennifer and I really love, and that's floor heat. We like to camp up in mountains and in cold climates. And boy, when you get up in the middle of the night and that floor is warmed, it is really nice. You can have even tank heating, so you can get four-season camping with it. So talk to your RV dealer. The one you want is Alde, A-L-D-E. I've got a link to their website right on our show notes page, which is roadtrekking.com/26. Alde, the only name that you need to know when it comes to choosing a heating system for your RV.
What's on your RV bucket list? Maybe the place Mike has for you now on this week's Road Trekking Destination of the Week.
Okay, this is kind of a destination that everybody goes to, but it's something that you got to try, particularly if you're in a small motorhome, Class B motorhome in particular. I wouldn't even try this with a C. And that is climbing Pikes Peak. Have you ever done that yourself? Now, Pikes Peak is, you know, basically just shy of 15,000 feet. And you can drive right to the top of it. Sometimes they close the road because of weather conditions. It snows up there every month of the year. And it's cold. We've gone, well, from the bottom when it was 85, 86 degrees down there. And then we've gotten to the top and it's been in the 40s. So it's a long drive, but it's a spectacular drive. And we drove up to the top of it in our Road Trek RV and went all 14,114 feet up. It's a long haul up. And when we entered the road, we realized why you could not do it in a Class C or anything bigger. You enter it off of Highway 24 west of Colorado Springs. And there is a barrier that's meant to keep out larger vehicles from even attempting that climb. And we pulled in, and first they said they were going to wave us off. And then they saw that our Road Trek RV was on the Mercedes Sprinter chassis. And so they said, oh, no problem, you can do that. So they just waved us around that barrier. And He said, you can handle this. Just watch the brakes on the way down. They will heat up, and they do. We'll tell you about that in a minute. But Pikes Peak Highway is what you take to the top, and it's 19 miles long. So it's about a 38 mile round trip, and it works the engine hard. It burns fuel like crazy because you are climbing. Now, climbing down, not so much. But if you do decide to go, make sure you have enough fuel. That's all I'm saying. There's no gas stations on that road. We've been to Pikes Peak several times, and on previous visits, I've tried to get to the summit and wasn't able to because, one time it was in January, and we made it to the 11.5-mile route up, and then a sudden snowstorm shut down the rest of the drive. You couldn't go the rest of the way. And we had to literally white knuckle our way back down because the snow just really was hitting. And we followed a snowplow down. We were the last vehicle off the mountain at that time. And by the time we got to the bottom, the entire road was closed. But on another visit, we tried, maybe we can't drive up. So we tried the Cog Railroad. And that's a neat thing you can do that runs to the summit. And it too had to turn around because of blowing snow and heavy winds. So on our last time that we were there, it was our third time, and it was a beautiful day. It was in August. Sun was out. It was great. It wasn't snowing. But as I said, snow falls up there all times of the year. It was 87 degrees when we set off, and by the time we reached the summit, it was 46. It took an hour and a half to drive those 19 miles. That's because there's lots of twists and turns, and sometimes you are going straight up, and you have to frequently stop at some of the pull-offs. You want to do that for photos because it's just spectacular. I'll tell you what, I'll put a link on the show notes page to the video and the story I did on the drive up, and you can see the photos, and you'll want to put this on your bucket list. We found nothing particularly scary about the drive up. I guess because we were too busy oohing and aahing over the incredible scenery. The road trek handled the constant climbing with lots of power. We had no problem. At Glen Cove, which is between mile 11 and 12 on the Pikes Peak highway up there, there's a place that sells souvenirs, and they have kind of a limited service restaurant. But after that, it's straight up as you pass the tree line where conditions make it impossible for any upright plant to grow. Mile marker 16, you'll pass Devil's Playground. It's named because of the way lightning jumps from rock to rock up there during storms. The summit itself is basically a parking lot. There's a small weather station up there, an observation deck, and of course they have a souvenir shop. When we rode up there, we were the only RV up there at the time. Although I've had other RVing friends say they drove their Class Bs up there too. I suppose a C might make it if you can get underneath that that barrier at the entrance to the road, but I think it'd be a tough fall for anything bigger than a B. We had a ball up there, and I took I had a GoPro camera, and I shot the drive up, and you can see actually what it's like driving. There's a video that I put up on my little blog post. This is from a couple of years ago, and then lots of pictures, and you'll see the photos are absolutely stunning. So climbing Pikes Peak in an RV. That is exactly what you want to do. Put that on your bucket list. If you've got a Class B RV, put it on your bucket list. You want to do it.
You're listening to Road Trekking, the podcast. You can find show notes, links to resources and websites Mike and his guests mention, and background material, videos and photos on the roadtrekking.com RV travel blog. And you can also send Mike a voice question to answer on the podcast. From the blog, just click the send voicemail button. That's at roadtrekking.com. The small motorhome RV travel blog. Travel blog.
Hey, I want to tell you about our friends in Florida, Leisure Time RV. They're the sponsor of this part of the podcast. And this is a family-run business. They've been in business almost a half a century. Can you imagine that, selling RVs? They are consistently one of the top road trek dealers in the nation. They have a full inventory of all the road trek models. One of the things that I get all the time from listeners, they say, where can I go see one? I want to actually see him and climb in and out. Well, that's where I send him. Leisure Time RV has got all of them right there. They're in Central Florida, not far from Orlando in Winter Garden, Florida. Nice little community. If you visit in your RV, they'll even help you find a way to, there's a campground right across the street, right down the street. They'll work it out so you get a, you can even stay free if you're going to shop there. And it is a really, really nice place. Great sales staff. These guys will work with you. They have, they like to deal. See, the thing with the internet now is, you know, like buying a car, it's changed the whole way everything is done. People shop now all over the country. So you can, if you're shopping for a road truck, no matter where you live, give them a call. This is what I want. And they're very, very competitive. They'd love to quote you out what you want. And they have lots of specials, lots of great deals. And they also have a lot of used stock, too. It's very hard to find used road trucks and Class Bs. And I would give them a call if you are in the market for that. They are just terrific people to work with. If you need parts for your RV, you want to call Leisure Time RV and you want to talk to Maureen. She is the parts goddess for road trek. She has all sorts of parts and she'll know exactly what you need. And just talk to her if you're looking to replace something because she's got them in stock and can get them to you. So let's take a quick check and see what the specials are from Leisure Time RV this week.
This is Tim Owens from Leisure Time RV. Leisure Time RV is celebrating our 45th anniversary of helping folks enjoy the RV lifestyle. Like Mike says, little house, big backyard. Leisure Time RV has been selling road trucks for over 25 years. Our staff is very knowledgeable, as well as two of our staff actually own their own road truck. Our current inventory is the full lineup from the Ranger RT, 190 Popular and 210, to the full Sprinter series, including a beautiful new CS Adventurous with the full E-Track package. We also have two of the new Zions in inventory. For a great price and great service after the sale, please call Leisure Time RV at 1-800-336-6565 or check us out on the website at leisuretimerv.com. That's 1-800-336-6565. Remember, your vacation starts at Leisure Time RV.
There you go. Thank you, Tim. Your vacation starts at Leisure Time RV. Hey, are you on the list for our weekly RV newsletter? Comes out every Monday morning. You can get it free. Has RV news, resources, tips, links to help you stay informed, get the most out of the RV lifestyle. You sign up right from the roadtrekking.com blog. You just fill in this little form. And when you do sign up, I'll send you a link. You'll get a right away. You'll get on this. As soon as you sign up, you'll get a download link to my RV parking packing list. And this is pretty cool. It's a little packing list that you can print out and then you can check off before each trip so you don't forget all those must bring items that you often forget. If you have a packing list, it just kind of helps remind you. And I'll give you a free copy of that whenever you sign up for the newsletter. You can subscribe to the Insiders RV newsletter that I do. Get it every Monday morning and you get the free parking list. Just go to roadtrekking.com. Check there. All right. Now, one of the biggest uses of road treks of any RV is to gather together with other people at a rally. We caught up with a friend of ours named Sherry Targum. Sherry is the president of Road Trek International, and that is kind of a chapter. She'll explain it in a minute, of the Family Motor Coach Association. She's actually, as we talked to her in this week, as this edition comes out in the last week of July 2015, she is in Madison, Wisconsin, where the Family Motor Coach Association is holding one of its big annual family reunions. Hundreds of RVs from all over North America gathered there, and she is there as part of a contingent for the Road Trek chapter. And she'll tell us a little bit about what goes on at that kind of a rally, as well as many of the other kinds of gatherings. But the focus of this interview is about those who travel alone. They're called solo travelers, and they could be a widow, a widower, somebody who is just single. And lots of people want to go out and travel and they worry about, can I do this all by myself? Well, Sherry is one of those solo travelers. And so I thought I'd have her come on the podcast and talk to us a little bit about what's involved in solo traveling. And then for all of us, what kind of happens at these RV gatherings? So without any more ado, welcome Sherry Targum. Well, joining us right now to talk about life on the road and solo traveling and who knows what else we'll talk about in this conversation is my friend Sherry Targum. Sherry's the president of Road Trek International, and she joins us now on the phone from Madison, Wisconsin at the big Family Motor Coach Association rally. Hi, Sherry.
Hi there.
How are you doing out there in this heat?
It's hot. It is hot, and I'm sitting in my air-conditioned road trip.
Well, that is the only place to be, is in the air conditioning.
That's
but you sound good. So let's start talking, first of all. For those who are unfamiliar with it, they probably have noticed on the Facebook group or other places we talk about RTI. And sometimes we actually spell it out and say that's Road Trek International. But explain to people, what is Road Trek International?
Road Trek International is a chapter of the Family Motor Coach Association. We are actually the third largest chapter of Family Motor Coach. And so we have a lot of power, actually. We are now parking together, which never used to happen in the past when we go to these big events. And that's always nice because road trekkers love to be together. So that's what we do.
You know, I think that's a pretty interesting point. You say it's the third largest chapter in all of the, the Family Motor Coach Association is the largest motorhome association in the world. And you guys being the third largest shows right. Just how popular Type B RV travel is. Everybody seems to think, oh, it's just Class A's, and that's not it at all, is it?
No, and the Class A's are beginning to recognize that we are a mighty force. They frequently at these events will come over, and as all road trekkers know, they want to see our rigs. They want to know what do we have inside because they look like vans. And how could they have everything that the big rigs have? And we do, as you know.
Yes, indeed. And I think one of the reasons it has become so popular is that so many people are actually downsizing from these skyscraper-sized Class A's to a Class B motorhome like the Road Trek or some of the other ones that are out there because they're so much more flexible. But what I want to talk about most of all, and we have a link on the Road Trekking blog on how you can learn more about all of this stuff, and in our show notes we'll put a link to the RTI so people can learn about Family Motor Coach Association. They can also learn about Road Trek International. But let's talk about one an offshoot of all of that. And that is solo travelers. And let's start with Sherry Targum, because you are a solo traveler. And maybe you ought to just tell everybody how much traveling you have done this year so far.
Well, I am, after I counted up the weeks on the road, I spend 75% of my time of the year in my road trip.
75%.
And until recently, that was with a pet, but right now I don't have one. We have a message board for solo travelers that own Road Trek, and we have over 260 people on it.
260. Now, who are these solo travelers? Are they widows, widowers, just singles? Who are they? Are they men, women?
They are mostly women, but we have a lot of men who have lost their wives but want to keep traveling. They one time had Class A's and have downsized to B's because it's easier. A lot of the women that are in our group have also been previously married but traveled and didn't want to give it up now that they don't have a spouse. And we encourage them to keep on doing it, and we support each other. We have little get-togethers now and then, and this year, of course, we're doing a big meet in the middle, which we try to do now every 2 years, and this year it will be in Hot Springs, Arkansas.
So this meet in the middle, we should give the dates for that. That's September 22nd through the 27th of 2015, and that is in Hot Springs, Arkansas, meet in the middle, and this is for solo travelers. Now, what is the biggest obstacle? And I get email quite often from people who have lost a spouse or they've always wanted to travel and they're single and they just kind of worry about things like safety and what happens if something breaks. What advice would you give solo travelers out there who want to do it but have been holding back because, well, they don't know what to expect out there?
You have to make the step and not be so afraid. You start out. You go to campgrounds where it's safer than if you're dry camping somewhere in the woods by yourself. You have to get very comfortable with yourself in driving and parking and how to do all the basic things. I don't do a lot of my mechanical stuff myself, but we do have solos who do. I go to someone who knows more than me about a lot of things, and I will say, okay, you fix it for me. Or I call the road check factory, and I'll say, what do we do about it? You have to get more comfortable. A lot of our solos have started out by meeting with other solos, going someplace where you're going to catch up with them and you ask lots of questions. And once you get a little more comfortable doing it on your own, when I bought my road check, I was scared to death about my propane. And now not so much. You have to get used to it, really. Here I am in a situation where right now I do not have electric power. My power is coming from my generator. My refrigerator, when I got here, though, I put it on propane.
And that's just a matter of really hitting a switch. Nothing complicated, right? You don't need to be a grease monkey or have mechanical experience. It's very simple to operate these things now.
Most of the things that we need to do are very simple, can be done by one person. It's nice to have company when you're parking. And when you're parking, you find somebody else in the campground to help you back in or wherever it is you're parking. If you're dry camping, you watch the ground and make sure you're not going to sink in the mud. Which I have now done.
You've now done that? Yeah.
I have now been in the mud, yes.
We have all done that. Now, a lot of solos worry about, I guess the first thing I've always heard when people ask is safety. And you've been traveling, as you say, 3/4 of the past year. You've been traveling long before that as well. Address the issue of safety and the solo traveler.
Okay, the first thing you learn is you do not walk away from your rig without locking your doors. You keep your keys with you. Mine are usually attached to my jeans. And you do not walk away without locking it, even if you're just going to a bathroom somewhere else, or you're walking across to someone else. You get used to locking your doors. You do not open your doors to anyone you do not know. I do not travel at night, and in the dark, I definitely do not open my door unless I know who's out there. Those are basic things, just like driving a car. You go shopping, you look around. Who's around you? Observation of every place that you are. We have solos who carry weapons.
These, of course, are just...
Yeah, they're comfortable with them.
These, are just general safety rules. But I guess my behind the question is, have you ever had any problems? I mean, how safe is it out there for a solo?
No, I have not had a problem. I got a little nervous one night. I was in a state park somewhere, and there were people in the next spot over with a campfire, and I had seen them when I came in. But it was after dark when they came over and knocked on my door to come join them and sit at the fire. But the conversation that I had with them was through the locked door, and I did not go and join them because I didn't know them.
But much of it sounds like they were just being social and say, hey, come on next door, join us.
Yes, they probably were. And had I talked to them earlier in the daylight, I might have joined them.
So you develop sort of a sixth sense out there. But should soloers not do it because they're worried about safety? I guess that's the big question I'm trying to get at is it's a safe.
No, but you have to be careful.
Oh, we just live in that kind of world.
Anytime you're alone, it's basic alone safety.
So your advice is...
I mean, the same thing happens when you are couples.
Yeah.
You're going to watch where you are.
So you want to be a couple. So you're at a rally now at the Family Motor Coach Association. They do two of these a year, we should point out. They're great, big, massive rallies. Everybody... lots of the big buses and Class A's and some Class C's and lots and some B's as well as those road treks that Sherry's in. But many of the rallies that you guys in Road Trek International are involved with are much smaller, much more manageable. And for people who've never done a rally or a gathering, what goes on there And maybe tell us about the great big ones, and then tell us about the regional ones or the smaller ones. What happens when all these RVers get together?
The big rallies that Family Motor Coach does are very educational. You learn lots of things about your rigs. And in the last couple of years, they're not just geared to the big Class A's anymore. The information is more general for any type of RV. You can learn about tires and computers and all kinds of things like that. Oh, and at these big family events, there are crafts for the ladies. You can learn how to sew and how to quilt and all make jewelry and all kinds of fun things. That's the idea of a rally, is to have fun besides being educational. And Road Trek International, when we do rallies, we have one big one, which is our chapter rally every year. We have about 100 rigs. We do some educational stuff. We do some business because we have to do that once a year. We have to have elections and vote on any issues that might come up. That's our yearly one. This year we're going to Nashville, so there will be lots of fun things, too. We're going on a boat ride for lunch on the General Jackson. There will be opportunity to go to shows, to the Grand Ole Opry. The idea is the camaraderie and having fun. That's... The regional rallies are smaller. We run 25 to 30, perhaps, rigs. And some of them do lots of sightseeing in the area, which is set up. Some of them are just very loose, and you have time to visit the area on your own. We do dinners together. We may do breakfast together. We may just hang out and do nothing. There are gatherings, as you've just done, for photography, which are open to road treks to learn things. We do... Mardi Gras in January, this coming one, in Mississippi. And we get together in a state park, and then we go see a parade that's done in that city. The idea is to have fun and enjoy our fellow road trekkers.
And basically travel about the country, and there's something about being together in a group that makes it a lot of fun. Sherry, tell us about you. You are, if anybody has, Sherry's always recognizable. She's got red hair, and you'll find her at all the big gatherings. But for those who don't know you, tell us a little bit about your background. How did you end up being a traveler in a road trek?
Well, I've always liked to travel. And before I bought the road trek, I actually had a minivan, and I had five cats at the time.
Five
and
cats?
Decided, five. Yes,
okay.
Five cats.
All right.
And I decided I wanted to go a few places that I wasn't going to wait to have someone to go with, like Glacier National Park and Yellowstone National Park. And I said, okay, I'm just going to figure out a way to do it in the minivan. And I took five cats across the country in a minivan.
Okay.
So that's how I started the travel.
Okay.
Which was very difficult. It also was much more costly because then you involve hotels. And I realized that in a month of traveling that way, it would be equal to 3 months of traveling in an RV. By the time I did buy the RV, I was down to one cat. So it was a lot easier.
It was something. Now, how did you tell us about your background? I mean, work, retired. What do we need to know for the profile of Sherry Targum?
I'm a registered nurse. I'm actually still licensed. I have done mostly operating room nursing, but home health nursing as well, and various other things in hospitals, including opening new hospitals. I've been a manager for a lot of my career. And that's mostly the background. I still love helping people, as I hope I'm doing with our road trek folks, making people smile. My father was a salesman. He sold ice cream, actually.
He sold ice cream? Boy, that was an easy job. I bet. I mean, I could do that job.
Well, no. He was an ice cream distributor. He delivered to stores. And I used to go with him on Saturdays as a little girl. My brothers didn't like it, but I did. And I think that's where my my gift of gab, so to speak, came from him.
Boy, is there anybody that doesn't like ice cream? I mean, what a great job in the sense that, yeah, people would be glad to see the ice cream salesman come by. Well, Sherry, you've—I hope you've helped soften up the resolve or firm up the resolve of a lot of people who want to go out and travel, and maybe they're a recent widow or widower, or they're single and they said, "Gee, that sounds fun, but what do I do alone?" And the show is, one, you don't have to be alone, and two, it's safe. Just use common sense precautions, but do it. Just get out there and enjoy it. And I'll put a link up to the solo Meet in the Middle rendezvous. Now, the Nashville event is already sold out, if I'm not mistaken.
It is.
Yep. And yes. I want to tell you, the Road Trek International is a great group. You want to be a part of the Family Motor Coach Association. And then Road Trek International will put links up to both websites so people can check it all out. And whenever you're at a rally, look for the redhead. And chances are that's Sherry. She will find you. that's about the truth of it.
That is true. I walk over to any road check there is. So
yeah. Well, Sherry, we'll have you back on the podcast again because we find that you have a strong following out there of people, and if nothing else, those who wonder where you are today will at least be able to find out on the podcast. So we'll get you back in a future episode. Enjoy the Family Motor Coach Association gathering in Madison this week. We would have been there. We normally do a couple of seminars for on Class B road trekking, and obviously, as I've announced, our dog died, and Jennifer's still recovering from pneumonia, so we had to cancel this one. But we'll be at the. I think the next one's in Perry, Georgia, in the spring, if I'm not mistaken.
It is.
So we'll be at that one for sure. And Sherry's going to be at a million others. You know, I wanted to point out one thing. You have a technology rally. One of your big chapters is doing one down in, I think, in Florida, isn't it, this year?
Oh, our tech rallies are computers and cameras and that kind of tech stuff. And we generally do them twice a year in Florida. And our next one is in November.
Well, we'll get them on your site. They can find. And I love that because our friends Jim and Chris Gould are there, the Geeks on Tour. But most of these rallies, these gatherings are organized around some theme. Maybe travel, maybe seeing some things like Grand Ole Opry, maybe learning about technology, maybe learning just how to keep your RV maintained. So lots of links we'll put to it. Thank you for being with us on the podcast, and say hi to everybody in Madison from Road Trekking, will you?
And thank you.
Traveling North America in a Class B motorhome. This has been Road Trekking the Podcast with journalist Mike Wendland. Got a question for next week? Click the send voicemail link on the roadtrekking.com blog. Till then, we'll see you out there. Road Trekking. Road Trekking.
Well, that's it for this edition of the Road Trekking RV Podcast. Complete show notes, links to everything Sherry talked about, those gatherings that she had, as well as Road Trek International, the Family Motor Coach Association, all the news stories we talked about, Jennifer's tip early on, and all the stuff you heard today. You can find that on the show notes page at the roadtrekking.com blog. It's roadtrekking.com/46. I'm Mike Wendland. I want to thank you for being with us. Ask you if you'd also do us a big favor and leave us a review and a rating on iTunes. Those five-star ratings that you've been giving us really help get this show noticed and out there into the podcast community. This episode is number 46. We have a new episode that comes out every Wednesday morning, and you can find out all about that from the roadtrekking.com blog. Till next time, I'm Mike Wendland. Thanks for putting us in your ear.